Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome everyone to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, we start off with a good martini. And believe it or not, and not many people do believe this because almost nobody actually watched it, there was actually a substantive debate for the Republican presidential nomination. It only involved two people, Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich. Shockingly, the issue of sexual harassment never came up except very briefly from Herman Cain, I believe, talking about how the media is completely irresponsible. But they had an extended conversation. The moderators were very limited. They had a back and forth that actually seemed to get into substance and detail and something other than the 30-second sound bites that are allowed when there are eight or more people on stage. So not sure this is going to catch on. The ratings obviously weren't that great, but it's good to see that at least two people running are willing to have that type of discussion, and hopefully it will catch on.
You know, Greg, I think probably the reason I'd say this is a good selection for our good martini is that if they did this once, they can do it again. Everyone who watched it, which was admittedly not that many folks, said that they were impressed with the substance of it. They came out of it liking both of them. I think a few more people said that they felt like Gingrich had better command of the issues, but it's not like this debate, you know, really hurt Herman Cain. Because they've done this on a Saturday night, if you want people to watch a debate, as I said in the morning jolt today, don't do it opposite high school football, college football, or professional football. So that kind of takes out Friday night through Monday night. I would say maybe it's up for somebody to – I realize we're getting closer and closer to Iowa, but take any two candidates and just put them next to each other. Romney Perry, it could be Gingrich and Bachman, it could be any one of these folks. And just let them debate and you know, don't let the moderators jump in so much and let them, you know, do substance and just see how it goes. The one quibble I had, and a couple of readers didn't like this point that I was making, is that, look, these debates are meant to say, help us pick the best candidate. And to be the best, you have to be distinct. You have to be separate from the rest of the field. To me, way too often primary debates all get into, you know, like I said, I described the Democratic ones in 07 and 08. I hate Bush. I really hate Bush. I really, really, really hate Bush. And Bill Richardson saying, me too. So to me, a debate, you know, you have to say, look, you don't just have to bash everyone else, but you have to say, here's what I can do if you, I'm the party's nominee that nobody else on this stage can do. And a couple of readers said, well, no, the point of the debates is to see who can, you know, best argue, make the argument against Obama. I don't see anybody on that stage who really can't, you know, argue against Obama. And it's kind of been the theme of all of them. I understand people don't want it to be negative. They don't want it to be personal. But at the same time, we kind of need to draw distinctions. And it sounds like this one between Cain and Gingrich, if everybody agrees on everything, it's not much of a debate. You know, and then it really gets down to personal style and charisma and stuff like that. So to me, conflict is what, you know, I think it was James Carville had once said that, you know, the difference between a positive ad and a negative ad is that a negative ad has a fact in it. A positive ad is always, I support education. Well, good for you. You know, a negative ad is my opponent voted against blah, 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 blah. And that, you know, whether you like that charge or not, the vote is a fact. So there's a part of me that feels like, you know, negative debates can be illuminating and can be illustrative. There's room for substance, and most people really like the one that was on Saturday night. So now we just got to do the same thing, just not on a Saturday night.
More is better, and given all the slew of debates we've had with very little information actually exchanged and transmitted to the viewer, more of this style would be very, very good. Speaking of style over substance in a different way, the president, of course, is running for re-election. One of the things he's recently produced is a new web video with the basic theme of, what would have happened if President Obama hadn't been elected, you know, 3 years ago? And you think they would have trotted out some of the arguments that we've talked about in recent days, 15% unemployment, Nancy Pelosi picking that figure out of the sky, and other things of just doom and gloom of what would have happened. No, that would have been far more substantive than what we got. Instead, it was this picture of Obama and his family celebrating his 2008 election victory in Grant Park, and slowly the whole celebration just erodes from the screen, and it's just Grant Park at night. And basically, for over a minute, the only point that the ad has to say is, we won last time and we might not win this time, so we really need you. Not exactly the case that is going to win over anyone except other than the ardent supporters, which are probably on board anyway.
I think actually a lot of that ad is designed to say, look, for all of you young people in 2008 who are on board with us, probably a certain amount of African Americans who are probably not as enthusiastic as they were to make history in 2008, I think actually they're probably that ad says to me they're very worried about everybody who was on the bandwagon back in 2008. Now I think you're right that the entire message of the ad is nostalgia. You know, it almost reminds me of that old Saturday Night Live sketch making fun of NPR hosts who would say, good times," you know, thinking of past things they've done. And this was kind of this whole sense of, boy, wasn't this, you know, wasn't 2008 awesome? Didn't you love that meeting out in Chicago and feel how you felt on election night? Boy, that was great. Because, you know, they'd say all of our progress could be undone. And I kept waiting for the air quotes around progress. Because unemployment's high, the housing market still stinks, gas prices are still high, Fannie and Freddie Mae need another bailout, more Americans are on food stamps than ever before. There is no record to run on. So what I think about is fascinating about this ad is it more or less asserts that there's a record to run on by saying the progress. And without specifying, you know, if there was progress to specify, they would have done so. So their argument, I think, is just kind of almost this giant Jedi mind trick to kind of say, look, you know, we can't afford to give up the progress, and hope that people hear that message and just think, okay, there is progress, even though all around them they can see signs that their lives really haven't gotten much better and probably have gotten worse since 2008.
Yeah, that's probably right. I'm expecting Obama, by the time the main campaign season rolls around, to break down his economic record into two categories: before I killed bin Laden and after. Even though there's actually no distinction economically between the two, he's basically going to throw that fact that he ordered a mission that took out bin Laden to basically distract people from the rest of his record, which is pretty horrific in all respects. So look for the dodge and distract effort, because he really can't do anything else other than go back and wax nostalgically about 2008. But that was a long time ago, and like you said, Jim, a lot of those people aren't really excited about 2012 in the same way they were about 2008. But speaking of 2012, Herman Cain seems to weather better than most people expected the sexual harassment stories and follow-ups and questions and slightly changing narratives from his perspective on what all happened with that. But it looked by the end of the weekend that, you know, this was pretty much blowing over, and while people may still have issues with it, and we'll see come Iowa, New Hampshire, and so forth, at least the story and the oxygen from the airwaves is probably going down. But now, Gloria Allred is here. And Jim, if anyone knows how to suck up media attention and basically demand massive monetary payouts better than anyone, it's Gloria Allred. This is the woman who was about to trot out one of the Tiger Woods accusers, and literally just minutes before that press conference, which was supposed to be a tell-all, a very lucrative deal was extended from Mr. Woods to make that go away. I don't expect anything similar to happen here. I think, quite frankly, Gloria Allred wants her moment in the sun. These people seem to have been more than content to let this story stay where it was. None of these women seem to want to come forward, but apparently one of them has been browbeaten to do it, so this story will continue, it appears.
Gloria Allred gets about as many moments in the sun as the Sahara. You know, I'm reminded of that very wise old saying, history repeats itself. First is tragedy, the second time is a Gloria Allred press conference. You know, on the one hand, we'll see what happens. But by Friday afternoon, when one of the accusers was not coming forward with any further information, then I, who had not been 110% backing Herman Cain throughout this and who felt this was a fairly ominous development, was willing to say, all right, look, without any specifics, I don't think you can hold this against Herman Cain. That in other words, like a kind of fundamental right of our concept of justice in this country comes from the accused being able to cross-examine their accuser, to say nothing of actual specified accusations. I mean, we don't know whether this was a comment that got misinterpreted or whether, you know, Herman Cain really had very seriously sexually harassed his employees. And without any details, I kind of felt like it was very strange that even though that news story dominated the entirety of last week, we knew about as much as we did Friday evening as we did midday Monday. We had 4 days of endless hype with no additional details. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get some details, and maybe this will have a better sense of what happened here. I was ready to say that in this country, if you can't accuse someone anonymously, not give any specifications, and then expect that accusation to carry any public weight. Now with this, maybe the circumstance will change. We'll see what happens. We'll see if the accuser's story, you know, checks out. Is it contradicted by any facts? Is there any supporting witnesses, any supporting evidence, et cetera? And we'll see. But my guess is that having Gloria Allred next to you really doesn't do much to, assure the public that you're 100% serious and on the up and up and this is not seriously an effort for a, you know, payout or publicity or book deal or what have you.
Her credibility is not exactly the thing you want attached to you, but it will get MSNBC focused on this story for another 72 hours. So you can...
I'm guessing the only reason she went with Allred was because Lionel Hutz from The Simpsons was unavailable.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.